thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
All weekend long.
Here's John Williams. That's
what I did. How are you? Hi, it's John. We're at the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon.
Lord have mercy.
On social media, WGN King John. Don't miss our Mincing Rascals podcast. Search for The Mincing Rascals, judged best in the city. Rashana Coleman, Roe is our producer today. Producer Elif Garris is away. Producer Elif Garris is away. She'll be back Monday in the saddle. It's good to see Steve Bertrand returning, and always nice to hear the voice of Don Kleppen, too. So this is John, and we're here in the Allstate Skyline Studio on the 18th floor. As I walk to work these days, I notice how much work they're doing on the River Walk from Michigan Avenue past Columbus Avenue, almost all the way down to the lake now. And so if you have been in the city and have enjoyed what you see from Michigan Avenue past Trump Tower to Wolf Point, where the river bends and goes north and south, that's been a very lovely and smart development that is almost too good for its own good. But now they're going east. And the black soil is there, the light pole stanchions are up, and I don't know if they're going to have it ready when the weather gets warm. They've still got a few weeks of work left to do. But my guess is, based on the progress and speed I'm seeing that they're working with, that you'll be able to stretch that lovely walk even further towards the lake. And I'm just happy to see your tax dollars working that well if you're in the city of Chicago. Speaking of which, the news click at WGNradio.com says, okay, 674 days later, the Mueller investigation was time and money well spent or a waste of time and money? Time and money well spent or a waste of time and money? What a weekend it was, huh? That report drops, and I only read it today because I was having a weekend and I didn't want to work that hard. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to read the whole thing, that the summary was four pages. I've read it for you. I'll give you the four sentences that matter in that report in just a minute. Also this weekend, like millions of Americans everywhere, around 6:50 last night, I cussed out loud in a public place. Why did I do that? Are you watching me now, Ro? Because of this. And that would be the play-by-play of the Duke game. 3-2-1
hit. Out to Taylor. Jones is on him. Taylor driving. Driving in. Banks it up. No. Put back. In and out. And Duke survives just barely. Inbound. Out to Taylor.
That was really tough. That was really tough.
My mind was just exploding that entire last minute.
There were just some moments there. That breakaway missed dunk that they had that would have iced the game.
And Zion at the end, where was he? He missed like two huge threes.
And a free throw.
Yeah.
I also don't think he was fouled to even get to the line. And then that running layup, and layup doesn't do that shot justice because that was a tough shot. But it almost went in, and those guys make that shot. But the putback was the sort of thing those guys make 8 times out of 10 with less than a second left. And it rimmed in and out, and Duke wins. And then we all get to watch once again Mike Krzyzewski be a gracious winner. I do not want to see that anymore.
They are so lucky.
They really are.
That was all luck there.
And I'm a Taco Fall fan now, man.
He's a beast.
He is one of the largest people on earth. He's 7'6" tall. His name is Taco Hall. And normally when they're that big, they're too spindly for their own good. They don't play that well. Better that you be 6'10 and strong than 7'6 and wiry. But actually, he's a pretty good 7'6 player. UCF, you never heard of them before.
Yeah, he's definitely making a name for them.
And they had some real good players, too. So, fine, Duke, you won. Whatever. I'm so bored with you right now. Ah! I didn't say it about 6:45 in a restaurant last night. It was worse than that. My son looked at me and said, Dad,
don't embarrass me. No, it's hard not to say anything if you're watching the end of that game. It was just mind-blowing.
I guess it was entertaining. Listen, I have been a Duke fan for years. When John Shire from the suburbs was playing for Duke, I really caught on with that club, and I was good for him for a while. I read a Bleacher Report story about a couple of weeks ago about Duke and Krzyzewski and their charmed existence, and it wasn't a real favorable column. And I've just been kind of tired of that show. I want you. And by the way, I had Duke in my brackets. So many people's brackets are right now. It's boring, right? Because the ones are all in. All the twos are in. All the threes or fours are in. You had a 12-13 game yesterday.
None of the fives are in.
Hey, Steve, what was Marquette?
I sent John a text during my vacation. When does Marquette play? And he said, November.
Yeah, yeah. Marquette not only didn't play well, they played really badly.
Yeah, they really did.
I'm sorry, but at least you were away. Steve, welcome back. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
I know you spoke briefly with Bill and Wendy, but you were gone for the week, and part of it was on a mission to bring eyeglasses and eye care to people. Where were you again?
We were in a town called Compostela, which is in the Nayarit area, about 3 hours from Puerto Vallarta. And a rural area, oh, the people, John, they were just so nice and gracious, and the food they cooked for us was phenomenal.
What were you doing?
So there's a group called Eye Care International, and they're out of Morris for the most part.
Morris, Illinois. Hello, Grundy County, the county seat.
Yeah, and it's where it started, and now there's a big California component too, but they just take thousands of donated pairs of used eyeglasses and go to areas of need, and they're optometrists. Julie was one. Tim Ortez is another one, and they sit in. I actually give eye tests, like with the eye charts, which was pretty funny.
Why was it funny, Steve?
Well, because I don't speak Spanish and they don't speak English, but we use pictures. Not everyone who takes the eye test is literate. So, you know, I've learned several different ways to say apple. And so they go through, and at the end of the day, people either get better glasses or for the first time in their lives, they have corrected vision.
What is that like?
I want to say this because I posted a lot of pictures and things on social media, and I don't want to seem like one of those people like, oh, look at the good work I'm doing, because it's just a fun group of people and a very rewarding sort of thing to do. And
Well, it didn't look self-serving at all, Steve.
I'm sure it did to a lot of people.
Oh, it did. No, well, then that's the
point.
Problem.
My point is that if you have old glasses sitting around the house, there are people whose lives will be changed. Just by you donating.
How do I do? You know, I used to give them to the Lions Club, or I did once before, but this is Eye Care International?
Well, the group was Eye Care, right, but I think that they tend, I don't know that they do collect glasses, but, you know, Lions Club, the Rotarians worked with us in Compostela, so, I mean, you know, you can pick your group, but there's no reason for them to be in the back of a drawer.
How old were some people that were getting their glasses for the first time?
I talked to 11-year-old little school kids. I talked to women who were in their 80s. There's a video of a woman who was in her 80s who gave me a long blessing with her crucifix after I gave her the eye test. Of course, neither one of us understood anything we were saying to each other, but, you know, there just was that. That's what I liked about it. There's just the nonverbal communication among all of us was really inspiring.
As a newsman, was it nice to just immerse yourself in that kind of a vibe for a week?
Well, very much so. And it's a great group of volunteers who went, like a lot of them are in their 30s from California. And yeah, it just was great to be sort of in our own little commune for 8 days.
Did you get away from the news then?
Yeah, I had my phone with me, so I would see some alerts, but I didn't really see any.
Nothing happened.
No, the most I saw were the anti-Trump T-shirts on the beach. That was where I got my news, pretty much.
There were anti-Trump T-shirts on the beach?
Make tacos, not walls.
Seriously?
Relax, you're on the fun side of the border. Or you're on the fun side of the wall. Things
well, that's
like that.
Good. That's
yeah,
good.
There were some pretty funny ones.
But by and large, it was devoid of all of that, and it was just good people helping some happy people.
It's so much fun. I mean, it's so much fun.
Well, you don't want me to say this, but props to you and those people, Steve, because that's just a wonderful use of time and resources. And yeah, Brenda and I were talking about it over the weekend, and I've got pairs of glasses right laying around my house. The next trip will include them. The problem is, when I get done with glasses, they're not all that user-friendly.
Well,
should I worry about that?
No, the people can find a way to rehabilitate them if you want.
Yeah.
Listen, about the people who volunteered, and I will tell you that we talked a lot about this. There's not one of them who won't say that they got more out of it than they gave.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that's true.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome back, Steve Bertrand.
Thank you.
It's 119 on WGN Radio. Okay, so let's do this. I want to talk a little bit about the Mueller report. I read the Attorney General's summary. You didn't. It's 4 pages. That's what I do, heavy lifting. We think big thoughts here, so you don't have to. There are four sentences in there that the president should be happy about, and there's one that he should not. I'll tell you which are which, and we'll ask you to call and text now, 312-981-7200. Was this a waste of time and money, or was this time and money well spent? This is WGN. 674 days later, was that time and money well spent, or was that a waste of time and money? You know, the thing is, Paul Manafort was convicted on financial fraud and conspiracy charges. George Papadopoulos lied to the FBI, found guilty. President's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, you've heard about him, pleads guilty about lying to Congress. Michael Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Roger Stone's been indicted. Richard Gates, the deputy Trump campaign chair, pleaded guilty to lying to investigators in the FBI. You don't have any of that if you don't have this investigation, but none of that really gets to the heart of the, well, was there a conspiracy or were the Russians hacking us per se? So the Mueller report looks into that, of course, too. There was two things that the Mueller report was charged with doing, or they actually turned in a report that came in two parts. I might mention before I just get to those four sentences I alluded to a moment ago, that the directions to Robert Mueller were to provide a full and thorough investigation of the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. The point is, the word collusion does not appear in the Justice Department's directions to Mueller. They didn't say find out if there was collusion. They said investigate if there was a Russian government effort to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. We discovered that quite clearly there was at a very high level. So my answer on the news click, was it a waste of time and money, is no. I think it was time and money well spent. But I told you that there were four sentences that I think the president and his people would be very happy about. The report came in two parts. Pardon me. The summary from the attorney general. No one's read the report outside of the few insiders. The attorney general's summary is in two parts. Russian interference and obstruction of justice. Was there Russian interference? And while they say there was, and it has been widely reported, they also say this, quote, the special counsel's investigation did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with Russia. Later, they say about was there a coordination between the Trump campaign and, say, Russian intelligence. They write, the special counsel did not find any U.S. person or Trump campaign official or associate conspired or knowingly coordinated with the IRA, that would be the Russian intelligence, in its efforts. Later, they write about the computer hacking of the DNC and Hillary Clinton. The special counsel did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these efforts. Those are three reasons for Donald Trump and his people to click their heels. When you get to part two of the summary, though, under obstruction of justice, this is a sentence that I think would give everyone pause about obstruction of justice. Okay, so to be clear then, yes, the Russians hacked. Yes, they interfered. Did any Americans coordinate with them, collude with them? That word doesn't appear, but you know what we're talking about here. Is there any evidence of that? And they say they can't prove that. The special counsel's investigation did not find that there was a coordinated effort on the Trump campaign part with the Russians. Now, what about obstruction of justice? It's kind of a different bailiwick, isn't it? The special counsel, this is a direct quote, determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment. Determined not to make a judgment. The special counsel does not make a judgment on was there obstruction of justice. The special counsel, I'm quoting now, therefore did not draw a conclusion one way or the other as to whether the examined conduct constituted obstruction. Instead, for each of the relevant actions investigated, the report sets out evidence on both sides of the question and leaves unresolved what the special counsel views as difficult issues of law and fact concerning whether the president's actions and intent could be viewed as obstruction. The special counsel states that while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. So, of course, the president immediately tweets out the exact opposite because he just likes to make us crazy. It's in direct conflict with what the president tweeted, but nonetheless, the special counsel says that we do not conclude that the president committed a crime, but that also does not exonerate him. Okay, the fourth sentence that would make the president happy. So Robert Mueller is saying we aren't going to offer an opinion about whether or not there is obstruction of justice. We're going to leave that up to the attorney general. And the attorney general writes, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and I have concluded that the evidence developed is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. So a lot of money was spent, a lot of time was spent, but not an extraordinary amount of either. In fact, one quick note for you, then we'll take a break and we'll get to your calls and texts about this. Manafort has five properties. Manafort has bank accounts and holdings. The amount of money that they're going to get from Manafort if they sell his properties and seize his accounts, and he's going to jail, and they have the right to do this. In fact, this is part of Manafort's agreement. He forfeits his properties. Manafort's holdings, if they get all of that, will be more than the cost of the Mueller investigation. Not that the money was ever an issue, but if somebody throws that up, tell them that this thing actually might be profitable.
Which is scary, too, because you don't want your investigations to turn a profit. No, I mean, really.
Right.
That,
I mean, right.
That could go
down the wrong path. But that's not germane, and nor is the amount of time that it took. Frankly, they said, well, the president was distracted. I don't know that the president was distracted. He didn't even sit down for an interview. Remember, his people answered questions that also specifically did not address obstruction. He only, on paper, with his people with him, answered questions about his behavior on the campaign trail. It's very limited.
Right, and it certainly looks, you know, good for the country in that the most damning allegation that the president might have colluded, it didn't happen,
right. Which
would be good. My only caution is right now you're not reading the movie, you're reading a review of the book.
That is correct, from the Attorney General.
Right, and so you're reading his account of what the book says.
Fair enough. Well, that's all I got.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
All I got. But be clear about that. This isn't the Mueller report I summarized. That's the summary I summarized.
That was written by someone else.
Affirmative. Okay. Who works for the president. But I'm not going down that road.
No, but I trust him to be an honest guy.
As do I. It's funny, though, because people like me and people much more like me, I'm thinking, oh, I don't know, Eric Zorn. It's very difficult for a lot of people to talk about this. For instance, the sentence, which is true, that this is actually good for the country, that this report evidently concluded that the president didn't collude, that should be cheered by all sides. And when Democrats say, well, that's good for us, you know that's a very difficult pill for them to swallow.
That's good for us.
Rather, they feel that the president had been found guilty of, or that there have been charges that would have actually led to some other event. They would have preferred that. Another few more years of this. How does that help anybody? Remember, though, when they do not find sufficient reason to charge you, it doesn't mean you didn't do it. It simply means that they didn't find sufficient reason to charge you. But that's a hair that even I'm not splitting today. That is the summary by the Attorney General. The question remains then, and boy, I can't believe that people are spending a lot of effort on this. It seems to me like the answer is so easy. Was this a good use of time and money? 312-981-7200. It's your turn after the news. Okay, the first 11 votes poured in while you were doing that.
By the way, Michael Avenatti will not be running for president, no.
Darn, because that was going to be the next news click.
The first 11 votes have poured in?
Yes.
I'm going to say 8 say it was a waste of money.
7 say it was a good use of our time and money. And 4 say it's a waste of time and money. So we're opening, the opening bell is at 64% say that it was a time and money well spent, 64%. In our 100% unscientific survey, which has in fact only asked 11 people who took the time to go to WGNradio.com. You may be listening there now. Some of you are texting in. We said we'll read your text, 312-981-7200. 224 says waste of money. 262 says waste of time and money because it was based off of misinformation. No, it was not. 847 says anyone who thinks it was a waste of money ignores all of the indictments and convictions. And with the fines to Manafort, we actually profit. 815 says, John, I'm not a Trump fan, but let's not waste more time on this. What do you say? 312-981-7200. Al, you're on the air. How are you?
Hi, John. Thanks for taking the call. Listen, I voted for Trump, but I think this was necessary. And not for the country, but for the Democrats. They were so hostile to Donald Trump that they had to do something like this in order to psychologically work through all this anger. So, you know, it may have been a waste of time and money objectively, but, you know, not doing it would have created resentment, such as there was in the South after the Civil War. So that's my opinion.
That's interesting. And, you know, too, Al, I mean, knowing what we know now, you could ask that question, was it a waste of time and money? But we don't know that the Mueller investigation, or at least the Barr summary of the Mueller investigation, we would not have known these things if, in fact, there had not been the investigation. They could have determined that there was. I know the president says there wasn't, but we're not going to take his word on that. So you can't know this until you investigate it, right?
That's right. So, and if you didn't do it, like you said, you would have left a lot of people grumbling and angry, and really, you know, there probably still are a lot, but this should at least satisfy some of them.
Yeah, and I appreciate your call and listening, Al. That's well put. Thanks for joining us.
Yes. Thank you.
Have a good day. We'll go from Al to Bob, 312-981-7200. I'd like to hear from you. Waste of time and money, yes or no? Bob, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello, John. Yeah, I think that it probably was a waste of money, but I also think that Trump put over the TV that he was asking the Russians right off to look into Hillary's email. So, you know, that wasn't anything private. It was right over the television. So, you know, I can't let him off the hook for much of anything.
Well, that's it. Can you imagine if we hadn't investigated? I mean, just think about that. And by the way, the investigation started when Republicans controlled the Congress. So it's this. I don't see this as partisan at all. And by the way, the investigation determined that the Russians hacked our election, and they indicted 30 people and three companies in Russia, including the Russian Intelligence Bureau. None of them are going to be extradited here. We'll never get convictions on them. But if you wanted us to use our full resources to determine if the 2016 election was influenced by the Russians, we now have an answer. And it's yes, for crying out loud.
And we put down a marker to them that we know how to find them.
How is that not important? How is that not money and time well spent, for crying out loud? Bob, I'm done yelling at you. If you have anything else you'd like to say.
I thought you had me on hold again.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we've had Trump waste a lot of money for us since he's been in office, so there's no end to it. We're back at it with the border again, too, so
All right. Hopefully
that gets straightened out, John.
Thank you for the call,
but, yeah,
Bob.
Yep. I'd like to know more about it, though, John.
About the Mueller investigation or the wall?
The Mueller. I'd like to see all of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good question, Bob. Thank you for the call. And I get the feeling you will. That's the way the trade winds are. Here's what's going to happen. So Barr and whoever else is going to work with him on this, Rosenstein and the rest of them, will have to determine, and this is part of the Attorney General's letter. Remember, they said, we aren't taking a position on obstruction of justice. The Attorney General determined that there is no obstruction, as is his right. So he's not going to prosecute that. But there are other entities that might. The Southern District of New York, there may be other charges that come out of this evidence. So now they have to determine what should go to a grand jury that we can't see right away. And so that's going to take a while.
You know, when you go to a movie at Christmas time and they show you trailers for films that are coming out in the summer, and you have to wait forever to find out what happens in the movie or what it's about.
Is that what this is?
I just want to see an account of the Trump Tower meeting. I want to see what they found there.
Well, Steve, you and I have been having this conversation for 2 years, and I don't think we're any closer to the middle than we were when we first started. You think the fact that they actually took the meeting is obstruction. They just weren't able to get the job done. And I've been... Am I correct about that?
Well, you're telling me what I think, mister?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I don't even mean it so much. But yeah, they said they did... If you're taking a meeting to try to figure out how to beat Hillary Clinton and you're doing it with agents of Russia, then you are conspiring or colluding. I think it is. But, I mean, look, I'll take Mueller. He was the guy charged with finding out whether it was a crime. And if he says it wasn't a crime, I'm on board 100%. I just still want to read his account of what it was that happened there because we've all talked so much about it.
I hesitate to read this because it's lawyer speak. It's wonky. But on part two, obstruction of justice, and this lends itself to what you just said, Steve, they write, this is William Barr, your attorney general. Barr with two R's. Look him up. He's your attorney general. It says, in cataloging the president's actions, many of which took place in public view, the report identifies no actions that, in our judgment, constitute obstructive conduct. Okay, here's the definition of obstruction of justice. By the charge that they were given, obstructive conduct, a nexus to a pending or contemplated proceeding, so there has to be a certain immediacy to it, therefore this, and we're done with corrupt intent. Okay, they said, each of which, under the department's principles of federal prosecution guiding charging decisions, would need to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So that they took the meeting isn't enough. You needed all three of those things. It needed to obstruct, it needed to be corrupt, and it needed to be immediately preceding something else that happened. And evidently, they didn't have all of those.
And again, that's William Barr's assessment.
Yeah,
that's not Robert Mueller saying that
that's
none
true.
Of those standards was met. That's Barr
true.
Saying, I
that's
got
true.
The report.
Well, but
by my opinion, none of them was met, which is the way it's supposed to work.
But Mueller could have said that. If Mueller had a slam dunk on those items, he could have just as easily said, and we find the evidence supports that they could have recommended, they could have charged, but they did not. They turned it over to the AG, and the AG said not so much.
Well, there's a long-standing policy of not indicting a sitting president.
One last thing about that. May I cut you off again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, they said, given these restrictions, I have requested assistance of the special counsel on identifying... They said that they made their determinations. This is Barr's summary of Mueller. That was done irrespective of the constitutional question about whether you can indict a sitting president. So, in other words, Mueller could have said that, yes, we have reason to prosecute the president. Now, we may find out, the courts may say, oh, no, you can't do that anyway because he's a sitting president. But Mueller did not concern himself
right.
with that.
But see, we're still doing it because Mueller might have written the president obstructed justice this way, or the president did this. And it's Barr's interpretation of those events that says it doesn't meet the, you know, we're still talking about the report, Steve.
I know,
and I don't want to argue. We're still talking about the review of the book. We're still talking about William Barr's version of the book, not the book.
Fine, but people aren't going to read the book.
No, they're not, and that's why this is a huge win for the president because it's now been framed.
It's been framed
as it came out. There's no collusion, and the Democrats have to be very careful now because the more they hit on it, you know, unless they do it very tactfully. It's going to hurt them in the long run.
It'll be subtraction by addition. They're actually going to go backwards if they continue to mine this. Now, maybe a court... Listen, I will not be surprised. I think the jury's still out. No pun intended. Will the president go to jail after his presidency? It's quite possible he could, right? But I don't think there's any reason for the Democrats to try and impeach him or to worry anymore about charges they should file against the president. I do think, and I don't know what get back to running the country means, because I don't think you can run the country if you can't trust the elections. So the most important thing in running the country is make sure we have fair elections. And we did not have a correct, or I don't know what the word is, fair, correct. The election was hacked by Russians who are trying to influence it. So I think the most important thing we can do at a nation is to make sure that doesn't happen again.
And I just want to restate that if Mueller says there's no obstruction of justice, that was his job to figure it out. If that's what he says, I'm with him. I just want to, and I don't want this to go on forever. I'm just pointing out that we're reacting to the Attorney General's reaction to the report right now.
Okay. Well, last thing about that, Steve. Do you think that somebody else with a greater voice of authority than the Attorney General is going to come out with a different interpretation of it? I mean, do you think that there's going to be somebody who... Are we going to get a drastically different summary by a credible voice here?
Well, do you consider the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee credible? If you do, then the answer is yes.
Yeah, because but he's a Democrat.
Okay,
Steve.
But see, now you I'm lured into making an argument. I'm not trying to make an argument. But what we have right now is the Republican Attorney General's opinion of it. The Democrats are also probably going to get it. They might see the facts in the report put out differently. The sticky wicket for them is how they react to that, whether they have smoke, you know, real information, or whether they just are made to look like sore losers and actually end up helping the president.
630 text, John, this is so hard for you. No corruption, no collusion. No corruption, no collusion. I hope that 630 also saw the part where it said, 30 indictments, 3 companies, Russian intelligence, and 7 guilty verdicts or pleas from the campaign, et cetera, et cetera. I don't need to remind you of all the people close to the president. So let's also agree that while there's no collusion, I don't know what corruption means. Yes, there was corruption. The whole campaign was corrupt. But there was no collusion with the Russians. I hope you'll also agree that it did bear fruit. It's 150. Okay, your calls and more texts. WGN. John says, 269, Barr spent about 24 hours to form his opinion on an investigation that Mueller spent about 15,840 hours on. The report needs to be made public. 312 texts, isn't it funny how everyone has turned on Mueller due to his findings? The texts continue, your calls 2 in 60 seconds. Spring's here. Have you switched over to CD1 Price Cleaners as you're switching out your clothes? You're definitely missing out if you haven't. You'll save an average of 56% on your dry cleaning bill just by switching to CD1. At CD1 Price Cleaners, any dry cleaning garment is just one low price. Doesn't matter if it's that men's or women's garment, maybe a winter coat. You got a great big wool jacket that you've been wearing and now you don't need to wear anymore. Let's get it cleaned and put away. How about a full-length dress, ladies, that's not in season anymore? Get it cleaned and put away. It's just one low price at CD1 Price Cleaners. And value pricing is just one of the many benefits. Same-day service is free. If your dry cleaning's in by 10, they'll send you a pickup alert by 5. You've got gourmet coffee on your way out, and that's free for you, too. Start spring with savings by making the switch to CD1 Price Cleaners, Chicago Spring Cleaning Headquarters. They've got, what is it, like 40-some locations throughout Chicagoland? Bet there's one near you. Ralph, you're on WGN. Jump in there, Ralph. What do you want to say?
Hey, guys, I think it was a waste of money myself. 20 lawyers and 40 FBI agents. And I think it's a dumb move on the part of the Democrats. They should have just left it alone and left the suspense there in the air, and then people would have questioned which it was. Was it or wasn't it? And how in the world does Donald Trump get indicted when Hillary Clinton doesn't get indicted? I mean, I'll hang up and listen, but it's just totally ridiculous.
Thanks for the call. I really appreciate you joining us. The Democrats didn't do this. Robert Mueller, a Republican, was appointed by a Republican administration to do this. The Democrats crowed about it and were worried about it and now maybe are taking a loss on the chin, but the Democrats didn't do this. This is Wayne. You're on WGN. Wayne, what do you want to say?
I just wanted to say, hold on a minute, okay? Just hold on a minute. I think Steve had it right, okay? I'd like to see the whole report. I mean, I think before we remember, there's a piece of legalese that I think you left out of what you were talking about in the summary of his report. And I heard last night on MSNBC by an attorney who's worked in this kind of stuff before, which I thought was really interesting. It didn't meet the level of, you know, of obstruction because the bar was set very, very high. Now, legally, that may be true, that the bar is set so high that it didn't. But what I would like to do is I'd like to see the report to see if common people like you and me and Steve and everybody else listening agrees with that. See, I don't think so. At the end of the day, I think we're going to look at this stuff and say, holy moly, what happened?
Well, maybe we're saying, you know, maybe people are saying that already. I mean, this is kind of my point. Regardless of the outcome of the Mueller report or the Barr summary or an impeachment trial that's not going to happen or charges against the president, I said, holy moly, when all of this stuff happened. The fact that it happened, that they had those investigations, those convictions, and those indictments, I think is holy moly. I don't know that anybody wins here. You could say everybody wins because we now know that. Listen to this. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for jumping in here. This is Sarah Sanders on with Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show. And the question was, after all of that, does the president owe Robert Mueller an apology? Hit it.
He's called him a national disgrace, discredited, a prosecutor gone rogue who oversaw a gang of thugs. In the end, this individual conducted investigation, came to a conclusion that ultimately cleared, as we just discussed, the president. Did Robert Mueller deserve better from the president than this kind of language and behavior?
Frankly, I think the American people deserved better. They didn't deserve for the election of this president to try to be taken
down. Wait a minute, but the president's rhetoric about a public servant doing a job.
Are you kidding? The president's rhetoric matches. They are literally, the media and Democrats have called the president an agent of a foreign government. But that is an accusation equal to treason, which is punishable by death in this country.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, that is... You have kids, and you know that if you say, did you do this? The answer isn't, yeah, but my brother did that. So let's talk about the president's behavior. He called Robert Mueller. He trashed him for 2 years. And in the end, Mueller just did an investigation that ultimately the president considers a total exoneration of him. Does he owe Robert Mueller an apology for that kind of rhetoric?
I think Democrats and the liberal media owe the president and they owe the American people an apology.
Sarah Sanders and Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show. It's 1:58. You haven't heard the last of this, but you have heard the last of this for this hour. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's 2:09 on WGN. You didn't see the movie Us then, did you, Steve?
No.
Are you going to go see the movie Us, the new Jordan Peele movie?
You said you saw it.
You were gone last week, but the lead up to the movie was making some, you know, there was a little buzz about coming.
I missed it. I don't know about it.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about it in just a second here. Before I do that, though, let me just finish the last couple of texts, because so many of you called and so many of you texted asking about or commenting about the Mueller report, the Barr summary of the Mueller report, in our conversation in the last hour. We spent some time talking about that. And just a few of your texts include these. John 708 says he did not clear him because he is honest. He cleared him because there was no evidence of collusion. 309, if you believe in election interference, well, who was the president during the election and running up to it? I think I know that one, Barack Obama. Ken says, John, you Democrats need to let it go. No collusion. You lost. Just fishing. Fishing pole emoji. 630, Mueller should have thrown this out as soon as the false documents were given to FISA. False documents given to FISA were discovered. Waste of my money, says 630. 773, the entire public has the right to the entire report. And 630 says, most of these callers are crazy. They should do business with Donald Trump and then cry when he screws them. Well, that's neither here nor there. You know, it was really funny to me, though, because Twitter and the internet can be a dangerous and unfair and certainly unkind place. But right after the summary came out, everybody took to Twitter to see what was going on, particularly people in the political world. And the president's greatest booster, Sean Hannity, and there's some other people over at Fox News that might jockey for the lead in that, but let's just put Sean Hannity in the top three, right? Hannity, when he gets the summary report that said that there won't be charges against the president, they didn't find sufficient evidence for any of that, Hannity picks up his phone and he tweets in capital letters this sort of stream of conscious word salad. Hannity tweeted, MSNBC, conspiracy, network, liars, fake news, CNN, liars, New York Times, WAPO, liars. when I read that, I just thought, I get it. I know you're just feeling it, baby. That's just you are like,
yeah.
I know. If there is a way to be happy furious, that is happy furious.
Right.
Just give me that phone. MSNBC, conspiracy, network liars, fake news, CNN liars, New York Times, WAPO liars. Send. Whoa. How'd I do? The commenters underneath tweeted back the following. Sir, this is an Arby's. Number two, banana, wombat, tennis shoe, polyp, couch, dead hitchhiker, in my basement, mommy, poop mirror. That's a response. The next person tweeted back, Albania, fiberglass, Xerox, determined, zipper, catalog, ballroom salesman. You get it, right? The next person, and a lot of people tweeted along these lines back to Sean Hannity, Seth Rich, aluminum, Seth Rich, I'm not doing this well. Seth Rich, uranium. Somebody probably tweeted aluminum, but that was just part of their word salad. And then finally, the next person tweeted back at Sean Hannity, sir, this is a Burger King, but he couldn't help himself. He was just riffing. I told you guys. So he was dancing. He was dancing. On a scale of 1 to 23 juju bees in my house, I gave this new Jordan Peele movie, Us, 19 out of 23. None other than The New Yorker said the movie is a monumental achievement. Think of those words from The New Yorker about the second movie the guy's ever made, Jordan Peele's Us. The headline today, if you haven't been following, is that it took in $70 million. That's the gross. And that makes Us the third grossing horror movie of all time for its opening weekend. I mean, that's all we've got so far. It is on a pace like that. I'm reading now from NBC. Jordan Peele's Us pulled in some huge box office numbers in its opening weekend, hauling in $70.25 million in the United States and cementing itself as the third best horror movie debut in the history of cinema. It had been tracking towards $50 million, but strong Thursday and Friday sales had analysts revising their estimates. The film took in $29 million between the Thursday previews and the Friday showings, a strong start for a horror film. Just two movies into his feature film career, said a senior analyst at ComScore, just two movies into his feature film career, Jordan Peele has established himself as a brand whose films are known for creating a scary good time at the movie theater while generating huge profits at the box office. The cast is terrific in this. Lupita Nyong'o, some people say, should get an award. Award season is so far off, you wonder how well they'll remember this. And horror movies don't always get many awards. And this, at its core, is a slasher movie. That was what was surprising to me. Don't worry, I'm talking about this, and I'm not going to tell you anything that you can't hear or don't already know from the trailers. But when you see those people in scissors standing there, they're doppelgangers, you know it's going to be a slasher, scary, good movie. And it is that. It's surprising how quickly it just goes there. I mean, people are just getting stabbed real early in this movie. The next four-fifths of the movie are what I did not anticipate. I tweeted back to my, or texted back to my sons. One had seen it and one had not. So we were trying to speak vaguely so as not to ruin it for the one who hadn't seen it. But I just said, wow, didn't see that coming. $70 million box office is the third best horror movie debut behind It, which took in $123.4 million during its first weekend last September, and Halloween, which earned just a little bit more than this did, $76 million during its opening in October. Peele's film had the best opening of any original horror film. Both of those are parts of franchises, of course. Internationally, it made just under $17 million. You know, they say this movie is about more, though, than just the horror film, just about, okay, who's going to get who are these creepy, evil people? It's very much a social commentary. The movie is called Us for a reason, and there's two lines that everybody's been quoting in their reviews or previews of it. They say, who are they? And the little boy says, they're us. And when asked, who are they? They say they're Americans. So you automatically know that there's more happening here than just a family whose doppelgangers are out to kill them. There's a pretty rich layer of social commentary there. And as I was sorry that I knew that, because as I'm watching the movie, rather than just sit back and go for the ride, I'm sort of trying to ascertain as the film happens, okay, what are they saying? What does that mean? Well, does that mean that the people are this way or people are that way? You know, it was really hard for me, just knowing that this was a very layered movie, to just let it happen. When I got home, I read the New Yorker review again. I read the New York Times and Wall Street Journal reviews, the Vulture and Cosmo reviews. I don't normally read film reviews, but I thought, okay, I'm not exactly sure what happened here, right? Everybody's raving about this movie. It's got so much buzz. So I go to see Us, and I'm thinking, oh, no, I'm too stupid to get a real popular movie. I don't know what that meant. I don't even know what happened at the end or what some of the points were that they were making along the way. And then I read the reviews. And the review said, well, we're not real sure exactly what happened here. I went, oh, whew, good. And a lot of them said this, okay, after just one viewing, this is what we think, or this is what maybe he was saying, or this is clearly what he was saying, but there may have been other points we missed along the way. So I do think it's a film that maybe you'll see at the theater, maybe you'll watch it someday on your TV set or laptop, but it's a movie you'll probably want to watch a couple times if you really want to know exactly what Peel is trying to say to you. One of the criticisms of the movie is that towards the end, rather than just letting you simmer, they turn the heat up and are very explicit in some of the messaging. And while I got that, there were still some times where I thought, oh no, I'm too stupid to get it, even where they're being explicit about the messaging. There are times where I thought, okay, now I see that they're very clearly telling me what they're trying to say, but I'm still moderately confused. The movie is Us. It is the best-selling horror movie to ever debut without any predecessor, and the third best all-time horror movie, $70 million. On a scale of 1 to 23 Jujubes, that's how we rate movies at my house, I gave it a 19. My son who saw it gave it a 19 or 20. My other son, Griffin, who produces my show on Saturdays, is the cinephile in the house, and he's seeing it this week, so we'll wait for his review later in the week.
I have not seen it yet, but I'm really liking this trend of more sophisticated horror movies.
I am not a horror movie fan, Lauren. I wouldn't go to it if
I know. Most people are not. I always have been, just because I like to try and scare myself, because I have not really found a movie that actually scares me yet. It's kind of like a challenge. So,
well, you found the right show to work on.
Okay, good. I just really want to find a great scary movie that will scare me, but now I can enjoy the movies even more so because the plot is great, or the actors are great.
The acting is really good in this. The kids are really good in this. And again, there are things going on here that you went, okay, totally weird, not sure what's happening, what's all that? So you get to do that. I was surprised at what a slasher movie it is, though. People, you know, it's funny. The monsters are using ordinary household scissors. Granted, they're a large pair, and they seem to be very sharp.
Which I hear was on purpose, because scissors are symbolic too. You know, this is an everyday tool that we use for multiple things. We don't see it as a weapon, but yet you can use it as a very deadly weapon at the same time.
Right. So, and I also think it was a nod to some of the other movies of that ilk. The kid wears a Jaws t-shirt, which I understand is a wink to something. I don't know. They say this has got a lot of little cues and signals and shout outs to other things in pop culture. Pop culture is referenced heavily in this. I didn't get all of it, but maybe
probably have to watch it through a few times.
Yeah, in my case, hundreds. But yeah, I don't go to horror movies. If you said, let's go watch a slasher movie, I wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. My daughter-in-law will never see this movie because she just can't enjoy a scary movie. I don't think this movie is as scary as his first one. The one before this one was really chilling. And while this one is in certain places, I think what it doesn't have in chilling, it has in... it's not the goriest movie you'll ever see, but it's a little more physically violent than the other one. and it's more complex. So there's my review. $70 million, us at the box office. Hope I didn't ruin it for you. I don't think I'll tell you what, I know I didn't. Bill and Wendy come on before Steve Bertrand and I. Their producer, Jazz, just strolled into the studio. Hi, Jazz.
Hi, hello.
You went to see that movie, Us?
I did. I saw it Friday.
Did you see Get Out, which preceded it?
Yes, I did.
What did you make of Get Out?
I felt like Get Out and this movie, Us, had like the same parallel as far as like the whole plot scene and everything else. So I felt like it was like in that same genre of horror and made you think. And it's a definite horror slash thriller.
Slash thinker.
Yes.
1 to 23 Jujubes. How many do you give
I would
movie?
Give it...
Us.
21.
21 Jujubes. Wowzers. 21. Can I just read you a couple texts?
Yeah.
John, my only criticism is that the movie was too dark or lowly lit. Some of the scenes were impossible to see. I didn't have that problem.
I didn't have that problem either.
John, Nick DiDilio, the ultimate expert on horror flicks. He's overnights on WGN, and nobody in America, I'm not kidding, is better at horror movies than our Nick DiDilio. Nick says Us is the best movie of the year with loads of homage to other horror flicks. Intriguingly, Dean Richards agrees. They rarely are on the same page. Both interesting and correct points.
Yeah,
you agree with
definitely,
that?
Definitely. Yeah.
John, you're giving away too much?
Just a tad. See,
really?
I really loved the whole aspect of the movie, but the music with the movie and how it aligned with each scene was amazing.
You will appreciate the music in this movie.
You would definitely
leave it at that. It's perfect. John, the reviewers on Nick DiGilio's show did a good job of not revealing too much, including the scissors and how they're two parts of one whole. Oh, that's interesting. So scissors are great. Classic slasher weaponry, but it also says something about us being two parts of a whole. See,
right.
This is what I'm telling you. Stuff like that, I didn't get. I go, wow, more scissors.
You're not the only one, because after I saw the movie, I am a critic of, if I don't understand a movie, I will go on YouTube and ask, like, say the movie Us. I put Us explained. So I literally did that.
I just brought coffee through my nose. Thank you. Well, okay, but I'm
and
not
I watched
alone.
Five videos of explaining and what everybody interpreted the movie to be like. And I was like, wow, I didn't see that aspect. But
okay, and I'm not saying that either. And the reviews that I read, I mean, you and I are not revealing stuff.
Right.
Frankly, the reviews I read also said there's stuff there. It reminds me a little bit of the Childish Gambino thing, where afterwards you went back and said, okay, what does that mean? What is the relevance?
Right,
that
like
what?
This is America video. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
In fact, and by the way, that was sort of a reflection of America. This movie's called Us because it's talking about America. So allow that parallel for just a moment. And in each case, you had to kind of go back a couple times to get it, right?
Right, definitely. You had to review the scenes. And when I was looking on YouTube and how they reviewed the scene, they're like, this explains this. And then I'm like,
I know.
Wow.
But I was glad that some of these big-time film critics and big-time sources, you know, Vulture and Wall Street Journal, even they were going, okay, we're not real sure, but we think this.
There was a lot of stuff that was left out, but I felt like Get Out was the same thing. Like, there was a lot of parallels where you're like, well, where did this come from?
I think Cosmo did that. They said, okay, 10 things that we still don't know. And some of that I don't think was answerable.
Right.
You know, well, what's with the this or what's with the that? And I go, I don't know, but I don't think you have to know what everything meant.
And I think that's why some people hated it also, because they're like, I want to know everything. And it's like, you're not supposed to know everything.
I just know that when I bring this up with my son and I start to throw these questions, he's going to roll his eyes in frustration because literally, as Brenda and I were talking about it, I said, okay, but in the final scenes, what about this and that? And I could already sense the frustration in her voice as she was trying to explain to me her vision of it. And I was having trouble even explaining what I thought the end of the movie meant or what happened. You know, because the movie is set in 1986 and in the current time. So
right. So it flips back and forth.
Toggling back and forth. 1 to 23 Jujubes, a solid 20.5.
Sorry, I can't do it. 20.5. Did
Bill and Wendy see it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, they didn't. I'm sure they would have brought it up if they had.
Yeah. I know Wendy didn't see it.
How do you know that?
Because she's texting me that you're giving away too much.
What?
You know, this is what bugs me about that. Thank you, Wendy, for listening. We saw the movie. We know what we're giving away. The plot points that I've even mentioned all take place in like the first 20 minutes.
If you've seen the trailer, you've seen most of what we're talking about, to be honest.
What we're talking about, but that's the amazing thing to me about the trailer of this movie. To me, the mother load of this movie is not in the trailer. The stuff that you're like confused about and thinking about and feeling.
Well, the slasher things are in the trailer. So, that's what we talked about.
That's in the trailer. But then everything else is like, go see the movie and
you got to see it.
And have fun.
Got to see it.
Thanks, Jez.
No problem.
It's 229 on WGN. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. I was actually going to play the temperature guessing game, but I was over there when you were doing the temperatures over here.
So disappointed.
We'll do it tomorrow.
Okay.
I haven't played it in a while, and I know you missed that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody texted in, hey, John, us was purposely ambiguous. 815, you should see a clip from Key and Peele called Roommate Meeting. And 630 said, why don't we ban slasher movies? What good are they for society? What are you, a talk show host? I don't think there's any problem with slasher movies. Don't go to them if you don't want to. I don't think slasher movies lead to more slashing, if that's your point. By the way, I told you last week that I would remind you that we have our next Thomas Jefferson show coming up May 18th. It'll be at the Tivoli, or do you say Tivoli? I believe it's Tivoli Theater.
I'm going with Tivoli.
The Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, May 18th at 10 a.m. The Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, May 18th at 10 a.m. At WGNradio.com/Jefferson, ticket information will almost certainly go up tomorrow. We're just working on the final details and websites and links and stuff like that with a couple of parties. But you'll be able to buy the tickets online, and there will be other ways for you to get them too, including going to the box office at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, May 18th, 10 a.m. We have a FAQ page and some fun facts about Thomas Jefferson and all of the details. And if it's not at WGNradio.com/Jefferson, when you go there today, tonight, first thing tomorrow morning, know that that will happen soon. The main thing I want you to do is to make plans to going to the theater in Downers Grove, 10 a.m., May 18th. This is Saturday. Jefferson will be on stage. The title of the show is Jefferson's Ticked. He said, I'm not ticked, citizen. I'm disappointed. But we'll talk about life then, life now. We'll let you ask questions and make comments. I interview the third president of the United States on stage for 30 or 40 minutes, and then you ask questions too. If you get dragged to this, just go and then discover that you'll be an advocate for it thereafter. That happens every time.
So I went to Monticello a few years ago.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place.
One of the things I remember was they had a dumbwaiter built in, I think it was to the fireplace, sort of, or the mantle.
He's very proud of that.
Where the wine, the from below, they would bring the wine up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He also had a calendar that was built onto the wall. They had to cut a hole in the floor because they didn't exactly plan it properly. He tells a funny story about that. His copying machine, machine that he invented, because whenever you wrote a letter, you wanted a copy of it. So you'd have to write every letter twice. And he reminds us they didn't just write letters like we do email or texts here, tweets for that matter. They took time to compose them, then write a good copy to send, and then a copy of the good copy, not the composed copy. He said, think about that. I wrote 18,000 letters in my lifetime. Multiply that by 3 to get the sense of how many letters I wrote, and then wanted to keep copies of. So he invented a machine that when he would write with one hand, another pen would simultaneously make a copy. I don't know how he did that. This is my idea. We're going to get some slides of these things and show them on a screen on stage, and he'll talk about that. Frankly, I think we should put up a picture of the slaves' quarters at Monticello too, but we could put up a picture of an iPhone for that matter. Now, that may not happen, but that was his idea, and I think it's a good one. Those are the range of topics we get to talk about on stage, Saturday, May 18th, 10 a.m. I hope that you can join us for that. Unrelated to any of this, this text says, hey, John, didn't you do a segment a while back on how much people overuse the word literally? John, you use it all the time. LOL, we sit here at work, and every time we hear you or someone else say literally, we all yell, literally! Just had to call you on it. Love the show, 847. Wow. I know. I feel some of the overused words and phrases I use when they come out. Literally, I didn't know that was one of them. Now I do. So, Kevin, Steve, Lauren, anytime I say literally for the next month, I will give you 50 cents.
But you probably use it correctly.
What if the times I refer to it is if it's in, it's appropriate?
What if it's literally the right word to use?
I will then say figuratively and be wrong. Now, is everybody happy? No, I don't think so.
I don't know if I should be included in this because my parents have told me I do the same thing with the same word.
That one?
Yes.
Oh.
So I've been very cognizant of it for myself.
I haven't heard you say literally once.
Oh, good. Then I've been learning.
I'm cured! I don't know, Kevin, do you have a word or phrase? Steve, do you have a word or phrase that people call you out on?
I have a phrase I'm working on to gain mass popularity. It's been slow so far, but my phrase, I'll say the world.
I'll save the world?
No. I'll say the world.
I'll say the world.
It's like an affirmation. It's like, whoa, that was a great movie. I'll say the world. See, it's like you're affirming it. We really enjoyed dinner last night. I'll say the world.
Where'd you pick that one up, Steve?
I really thought other people said it, and so I was saying it, and it just drove my wife crazy, but I thought it was a saying, and so now I think it should be. I don't know where it came from, but I have a T-shirt that says it.
You do not have a T-shirt that says
it. I
do.
I'm thinking of selling them.
Did you make the T-shirt, or did somebody else make the T-shirt?
My son gave it to me for Christmas.
But that means that he just called you. He had that shirt printed because you say that?
Yeah, he said, Dad, I think this is a great gift, and I said, I'll say the world.
Lauren, you're younger than us. Have you ever heard of that saying?
No, but it makes me laugh.
See?
I'll say the world. I'd like to help you with it, Steve. I just don't know if I'm qualified to use it properly.
I feel like most people are like, what did you say?
Right.
Just it's like, yeah, right on, sister. I'll say the world.
Faux shizzle.
It's been slow starting, but I feel good about it.
All right, so I'm going to say something that you'll agree with. It'll be a sort of a broad thing that needs an affirmation, and then
right.
You do it, so we'll just kind of give it a test run.
Okay.
Boy, it sure is a nice sunny day.
I'll say the world.
Yeah.
See? Doesn't it? It just speaks to you.
To which Lauren Lapka then says...
I still just laugh.
What?
It does sound like I'll save the world.
That's it. I mean, I'm like, wait, whales? What? Who
no.
are we saving? Owls?
You know, like there's the phrase, I'll say, well, I'll say. That's just the conclusion of it. I'll say the world.
And then the world is sort of a...
Makes it bigger.
Emphasizes that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say the world.
See? And that flowed.
It just happened there. Still, if I... I'm gonna walk that around this week, Steve.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I'll report back to you. Try that at home. Don't call or text now. Just report to us later this week.
I'm going
to
get some shirts made up.
I'll say the world. It's a four-word saying that just debuted here on WGN. Mary Wisniewski writes about transportation for the Chicago Sun-Times, and online today, her story is, when you encounter the mentally ill on the L, be kind, and don't make it worse. It's a really thoughtful, interesting piece that you could almost take off of the L and just consider for a minute how you react with these people generally. She wrote in part, a man is talking to himself, maybe moaning, maybe yelling at invisible enemies. He may look like he has been sleeping rough. The situation may make you anxious, worried, or angry, and it may be a situation occurring more often. The number of people showing obvious signs of mental illness in public places has likely increased in recent years due to a lack of adequate funding for treatment, the opioid epidemic, and the impact of violent trauma like shootings, which can exacerbate mental health issues. That according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And then she spent some time talking about just how we don't have a place to put people that are mentally ill now as a result of public policies and funding. And again, more people are on drugs, more people have been traumatized by violence, etc. And she writes on the CTA, people who shelter on transit usually ride the red and blue lines. And I'll second that because I ride the red line and I will frequently see people sleeping there, sometimes during the middle of the day. The red and blue lines, which run 24 hours. Workers go out every night to talk with people at certain points along those lines and connect them with social services. On board the trains, experts advise riders to not argue with people having some kind of emotional crisis, not to yell, shut up at them. The best thing is to let them be, said an expert. You could escalate the situation by trying to argue with them or getting them to stop. You don't know what's inside their heads. Just because someone is talking to herself does not mean she needs help, but if a person is screaming or crying or threatening to cause harm, it may be appropriate to offer assistance just as you would for someone having a heart attack. There are a number of ways to help, hitting 311, etc. I've got to tell you, I see stuff like this all of the time, and I don't want to put all of them in the same category because not infrequently. I would say every week. I would say every week when I'm, so that's 10 rides a week on the L for me. Somebody is in my car panhandling, and they generally don't really bother anybody. You know, you're sitting there, 85% of the L riders are looking at their phones anyway. And they got the buds in. Sometimes people are talking, but pretty much that's the drill. And then somebody gets on and they make an announcement. Hi, everybody. And then they, I'm blind, or I'm down on my luck, or I've got kids at home. I'm a veteran, whatever. And could you please help me? And then they just slowly repeat that as they walk down the car. They don't stop and grill anybody. They may stop in front of you, but it's not you. It's just they're working the train car, and virtually nobody ever gives them any money, and then they go on to the next one. That's not what Mary Wisniewski is talking about. I always feel bad about those people. What a miserable existence, right? I never give them any money, in part because I don't think that's really ultimately helping. Also because I think that'll make the other people on the train look at me, and I don't want to be that guy, and I don't want to disrupt the exit of this person as quickly as possible. So everybody tends to ignore them. Then there are times, though, where somebody is clearly mentally imbalanced. And again, everybody ignores them. I feel a little bad about that dynamic, too, because, doggone it, here's a person suffering. But what are any of us going to do about that, right? There's nothing you can do. So you tend to ignore them, in part because you don't want to really set them off. And then I've mentioned a couple of times instances when I see this where somebody is profane and really verbally lashing out at people. And again, everybody ignores them. Nobody tries to calm that guy. You just kind of wait for it to pass. Sometimes you get off at the next stop, even if it's not your stop, and you get onto the next car. But I see all of that stuff there. Wisniewski is at least asking us to call 311 if there's an emergency. That is, if you think this person really needs help, but mostly to just ignore them, but not to engage them. Don't yell at them. Don't criticize them. And I guess ultimately that's what we all end up doing. I've always wanted the CTA to get more involved in these situations. I don't know how they're going to do that, though, right? You can't have a monitor on every car, and we don't need one. But maybe a monitor on every train who's just kind of walking up and down. Metra has that because that's how they get your ticket. So if there is an incident, and I have seen that too on Metra, less, but if there's an incident, then I've literally seen them stop the train at the next stop and the police are waiting because somebody was in an argument about a ticket. Metra has a way to deal with that. The CTA does not, and I don't know what the options are. Maybe you've got a thought. The number's 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Does that make you horny? I just don't think that happens. It's amazing to me. It's like, well, I hurried up and finished this little project here. What'll we do now? Immediately it goes there. I'm signing up. I don't know about you. It's 2:53, and that, oh, shoot. Lapka, this would be a good time for me to insert the Bertrand saying. What is the saying again?
I'll say the world.
And then you would go, boy, I'll say the the world.
I'll say what? And then that's how you come up with the saying, say what?
Really, I think the way for me to even remember it, because you got to remember it to use it, is when you just go, I'll say, and then the world. Okay, I'll say the world. I don't think I have the rhythm, the cadence down for that it really requires. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, Rose back from Arizona. You may have heard him on the radio over the weekend, Saturday with me. He actually did a little play-by-play and color commentary with Steve Cochran. They were in the booth with Ed and DJ. Steve Cochran had a very funny commentary about how that went on his show this morning. And Kevin Powell is back from Arizona as well. I'm sure they have a few things to say about the Mueller report, too. Our news click today at WGNradio.com is a real simple one. And the question is, 674 days later, the Mueller investigation was ... You have two options. A, a good use of our time and money. B, a waste of our time and money. Good use of time and money, waste of time and money. Go to WGNradio.com. You can vote with your mouse there. You can text into 312-981-7200 as well. I suspect Roe will have a few things to say about that, plus some travel log tips from Roe. They were golfing. They were hanging. They were going to the ball game. Our first broadcast of White Sox regular season baseball is Thursday. Remember, the following Thursday, join us at Cork and Kerry on the south side, just across the lot from the ballpark as we get ready for the White Sox home opener. That'll be Thursday after this Thursday. There was one other thing I was going to mention here, and let me make sure that I have got it. Shoot, it just slipped out of my mind. I got to take a break anyway. The stories that matter come your way next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, plus Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis.
Let's go. Welcome back, Chicago White Sox. Hey, baseball belongs right here, 720 WGN.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-700-9159. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-700-9159. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-700-9159. 1-800-700-9159.
Hey guys, I'm Bill Rancic. Help save a kid in crisis. Please join me and the Mercy Home for Boys and Girls in supporting March for Kids by making a donation or becoming a volunteer this March. Join the march, everybody.
Visit mercyhome.org.
Now, I'm no knee doctor, but I know this much about knees over time, the tissue between the bones and the things in there. Like I said, I'm no doctor. It wears out. And then you've got knee pain. And when you have knee pain, it's hard to walk. It's hard to enjoy life. Folks have trouble sleeping through the night. If you go to the Joint Relief Institute, they'll use a fancy digital imaging machine. It's amazing. You just sit down like in a doctor's exam chair. There's paddles on either side. They are able to see in real time your knee. You can watch, too, and they'll be able to point out to you right where the tissue used to be. It ain't there anymore. And then they put a joint lubricant into that spot. And if you want to watch that, you can, too. Literally, I was looking at the screen and I saw my knee, and then I see this inky black substance flowing in. And I said, What's that? What's going on there? And they said, well, that's your knee. And I looked down and I saw that they were actually putting that joint lubricant into the exact spot where the tissue had been compromised. I was watching it in real time. And the takeaway from that is that this really is a pain-free, outpatient, non-surgical procedure that, by the way, I'll bet your insurance is going to pay for. They have an insurance specialist. If it's Medicare or Blue Cross Blue Shield, whatever it is you've got, they will walk you through and help you get the maximum coverage. Here's the number to call. They're in Orland Park and Oak Brook 2, 708-888-0000. That's 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. Okay, that wraps it up today. Tomorrow I might be able to give you exact information on how to get tickets to see our Thomas Jefferson show, and I really hope you come to that. They're always a lot of fun. They're always really informative. You always feel better about America and just a little bit more in touch. Let's leave it at that for now. Details tomorrow. Into Studio A, Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis are putting their headphones on. Anna's over there now.
Hey, John. Some people are feeling better about America just based on the news over the last 24 hours. And we are going to talk to Mike Monaco, you know him, about the Mueller report analysis, but also this breaking news about Michael Avenatti. And the, boy, oh boy, oh
you
boy.
You know, really, I want the Avenattis of the world to not be Americans or in the news anymore.
I know it's...
We, We're just like such a scummy country,
I know,
for God's sake.
And it's like one scum fighting another. It's like, wait a minute. God, just stand away. Down. Stand down and go away. So he may be going away. We'll have to ask Mike Monaco how the seriousness of these charges. It sounds very serious, of course, and carry a lot of years of potential prison time. Lourdes Duarte will help us get ready for the mayoral debate on WGN
TV. That's tonight, right?
Tonight at 7. We'll be carrying it live, as well as CLTV and WGN TV.
I'm going to make a prediction about that one, by the way.
All right.
Well, Lori Lightfoot hasn't been spending any money. I mean, Preckwinkle lately, and everybody says it's Lightfoot. I think this is her last chance to, if she's going to make a stab, if she's going to get a last second push, something Lightfoot's, Preckwinkle is going to, I don't know what tonight. Something surprising.
She's finished.
Wow, the voice of God.
This
certainly
is her
the
last. She wants this. She's ticked that Lori Lightfoot's just like killing her in the polls, so she's going to blow up tonight. She's going to say something. She's going to throw a shoe.
Yeah, she's already kind of done that, though, right? I mean, she's basically, she had Bobby Rush out saying that, the next.